How continuity in the backcourt can take Auburn to the next level. Welcome into this edition of the Barn Hoops Podcast. As always, I am your host, Jacob Hillman, and today we're breaking down some scheduling news as well as a breakdown of what Stephen Pearl called the two biggest recruiting wins of the offseason so far and why that can be a big deal for the 2026-27 Auburn basketball team. So make sure you are subscribed right here to the Barn Podcast Network or wherever you listen to your podcast, hit the like button on YouTube as well for all of the breakdowns right here on the Barn Hoops Podcast as we trudge through the offseason and get towards the regular season in November as well as the football offseason and break down the rest of this Auburn baseball season. So much content to take in from the Barn Podcast Network. You don't want to miss any of it. But right now, we talk Auburn basketball. And we're still waiting for that wing position to be filled and the roster to be finalized and a few other things to kind of come into play with scheduling news and things like that. And we'll start with the schedule with what we know now. And that's that the Players Era Festival will not look the same as it did a year ago. And that was obviously a large field that way. Let's be real. It was a bit of a mess with the tiebreakers and teams not playing each other. It wasn't like the Maui Invitational or the Battle for Atlantis or even the Cancun tournament or up in Brooklyn that Auburn's played in historically. It was a lot of you'll figure it out as you go. Now, that's not going to be the case here with the Players Era Festival for the bracket that Auburn is in. Auburn is going to share a bracket with the Florida Gators, the Houston Cougars, the Kansas Jayhawks, the West Virginia Mountaineers, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, and then the UNLV Running Rebels. So that's eight teams. It's more of a traditional feast week style tournament. Now, the difference is this is going to come the week prior to feast week, and that throws a whole wrench, I think, in what to expect for the Auburn basketball schedule coming up. That obviously, we're going to get more news as the months roll along about who Auburn's going to play and where. We know the Tigers are going to host Arizona at Neville Arena in that return trip from the McHale Center. We know that Auburn will travel to an ACC foe. So those are the kinds of things that you know are ready. And there's a few other scheduling notes that are confirmed, just not as notable as those. And this, like I said, kind of throws a wrench in it because this will be the time that Auburn is playing a lot of those tune-up games to get ready for this tournament and really gel together and find itself. Last year, Auburn played Oregon with a big win there, obviously lost to eventual national champions Michigan in dominating fashion before beating St. John's, a team that won the Big East and had a good season last year under Rick Pitino. So this will be another opportunity to face some of the elite programs in college basketball if Auburn is to advance into the championship or at least the third place games of this tournament. I would expect Auburn to be kind of on the side of the Floridas, Houstons, and Kansas right there on the top or at least the teams that are going to have the best draw. This another note for this is last year it was on TNT, TBS, True TV. These games are going to be on ESPN. ESPN has taken the rights for the Players Era Festival this year. I think they're calling Auburn's bracket the Players Era 8. Obviously, that makes a lot of sense with 8. But I don't think Auburn, Kansas, Houston, or Florida are going to play each other in the first rounds. That is what is the point I'm making. I think Auburn will either play UNLV, Rutgers, Notre Dame, or West Virginia in that opening round. Obviously, won't play Florida in that opening round. They'll keep the conference opponents apart. So that also makes it a little weird with three Big 12 teams, Kansas, Houston, and West Virginia in there. But I think as long as the the games are those conference matchups are being avoided in the first game of the multi-team event, I don't think there's much pushback there. So I would expect Auburn to play either UNLV or Rutgers or Notre Dame or West Virginia to start things off and likely be on the complete opposite end of Florida. So potentially a matchup with Kansas or Houston in that second game of the week in Las Vegas. And again, I think the biggest key here is the timing of this, is that it comes a week before what we know as Feast Week. And that's gonna, like I said, it's gonna be different for Auburn. That's not something this program is used to. It's used to playing in tournaments like Atlantis or Maui that happen Monday through Wednesday of that week, or Wednesday through Friday. And they gear up for that ACC challenge or a tough midweek the week after at home or on the road. And now there's going to be a week apart. You'll probably get a home game against a bye opponent on that Tuesday of Thanksgiving week or so. That would be my guess. But obviously nothing confirmed at this point to really warrant any guesses there. So I'm excited to see where this goes, this tournament in general, just from the aspect of this is obviously a new thing. And last year, it kind of looked just dead in Las Vegas. There were no fans there. Auburn was playing in front of dozens of fans for that St. John's game, the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. So is this maybe going to cause more hype around it with it not being a long day, or you're playing four games and that's it? We'll see. I don't know. But again, I also think that with the way non-conference games are continuing to be scheduled, I should say, you look at Auburn last year, toughest non-conference schedule in the nation by a long shot. And it didn't quite work out for the Tigers, but they're still scheduling tough this year with this tournament, with the ACC opponent, with Arizona coming to Neville Arena, playing Wisconsin in Nashville. That game is in December, in mid-December, right before Christmas. So all of that to say, I think these things are trying to be spread out more so that it's not right on top of each other. Like Auburn played that Players Era Festival, NC State, Houston, and Arizona all within, I think, a 3-week span last year. And of course, that's what you face when you get to March in the NCAA tournament. But teams are a lot different in March than they are in November and December. There's obviously a lot of development that goes into that. And that's part of the discussion we're going to get into here in just a few minutes about the backcourt of the Tigers and why it's so important to bring back Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton. But really, this I like this for Auburn. I think this is just a way better format. Listen, I'm a traditionalist. We talked about it this last week with the NCAA tournament expanding and everything that goes into that. I absolutely despise the fact that Maui and Atlantis and even Cancun and the Charleston Classic and so many other of these multi-team events are losing their luster. And part of it is just how expensive it is to get out to Maui, to get to Atlantis, to go into another country. That's not easy to do. There's a lot of work on these director of operations and these teams, and the funding makes it difficult. So yes, that's part of it, and you can't really argue against it in that aspect, especially with what the Players Era and some of these other MTEs are offering. But it's still just it's a little disappointing that this is clearly the direction that it's going to continue to go, especially with the NCAA tournament field expanding. I went to that Maui Invitational in 2024 when Auburn won it, and really it feels like that was the last real Maui Invitational. Auburn won probably the last real NIT as well. So that was such a special week. And heck, I implore anyone that's thought about going or is a big basketball junkie. You probably are if you're listening or watching this podcast in the middle of May. And regardless of the teams in the field, go out there, support that island, because one, they suffered some devastating fires and other tragedies, but it's just such a cool week and really a good celebration of basketball. It's the best venue I've ever watched a basketball game in. It truly is just a gym and really close quarters. So you're right on top of the action, and I'm getting into a rabbit hole, but that goes for Atlantis as well. I've never been there. And that's more of a resort and things like that with Cancun. The Charleston Classic is one where that's an amazing city to visit, even if you're not going for basketball. But go for basketball. Go for that event and support it. It is what I'm getting into there. And again, it feels like 2 weeks in a row I'm preaching to the choir about why a lot of these developments kind of suck. But it's understandable. I like what the direction that the players era is going now. The week following is going to be more of the same, but it's not. I think it's going to be a little more straightforward. You're not going to have point differential, points for, points a lot. Like we don't need to have to worry about that during the week of Feast Week. That's not what anyone wants to do. Auburn will clearly be in a much easier to understand bracket this upcoming Thanksgiving-ish time. So looking forward to that. Like I said, I think that this is going to be a huge opportunity. You might get an SEC game in November, which would be cool. But otherwise, you have a chance to face either a blue blood in Kansas or maybe kind of a new blood in Houston with how well they've played over the last few years. So that leads me into the next discussion. And again, this being a week earlier than it was last year and the multi-team event being pushed up, you're going to have to be ready to go. Really, the second, you're 2.5 weeks into the season when you're going up against these teams. And I mentioned Florida, Houston, Kansas, but West Virginia, Notre Dame, Rutgers, and UNLV, while some of these teams have not been good recently, they have history of being good. It wouldn't shock me one bit for one or two of these teams to make a leap and be a really good team. And the leap that I want to talk about is the backcourt of Auburn, Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton. Two guys that Auburn brings back, and Pettiford in his third season in Auburn, Kevin Overton in his second, and then you add on George Kimball III, who will be Auburn's backup, really, point and shooting guard. And obviously, you have guys like Simon Walker and Caleb Williams, who are the young guys that are going to hopefully develop into a significant role. But right now, we know the three guys that are going to get the majority of the minutes when you get into SEC play and especially into postseason play. So this was discussed at the Ambush event last week. We talked about what Coach Pearl said about the culture and everything. And again, I want to really dive into that, but I really want to do it whenever the roster is actually finalized and we can really break it down that way and look back at the historical teams. So, well, that will be saved for another day. I've got the bookmark on it. But another thing he mentioned was the fact that he thinks that the most critical part of this offseason was returning to Hod and KO. And it's hard to disagree with that in the aspect that while you look over the past few years and what teams that have been successful have done, and the last two national champions, I think, have had the most elite front courts that were in the NCAA tournament. Michigan, obviously, dominant with just giants down low. And then we know what Florida brought to the table two seasons ago. And I think Auburn tried to add to that and bring that to the forefront of its attention with the additions of Narcisse Ngoy and Buke Oboye and so on and so on, Owen Freeman and Thomas Dowd. But the only way those guys are going to step in and be effective as they have been in their careers, whether that's over in France, at Santa Clara, at Troy, or Adam Olson at South Alabama, and Owen Freeman, obviously his freshman year at Iowa when he won Big Ten Freshman of the Year, is by the backcourt being really consistent and understanding what Stephen Pearl and Mike Burgemaster, specifically Burgemaster in the offensive end, want out of the offense. And there's no better way to do that than the guys that are going to touch the ball every single possession, bring it up the floor, call out the plays, and start the motion of the offense. And that's what, obviously, Tahad and KO are going to do. I think that, obviously, we know what Tahad is capable of. We know now what Kevin Overton is capable of. That NIT run where he wins the tournament MVP proved that. We had an idea of it. He had great games in the non-conference against like NC State. He had some as well in the SEC play, and he had good games when he was at Drake and Texas Tech. But the NIT was really where he came out of his shell and showed the explosive scoring ability that he was capable of. And it's why the post game of that championship game against Tulsa, when Auburn blows that lead, then ties the game at the very end, thanks to Kevin Overton, and they go to overtime. He hits the dagger three, quite frankly, to clinch it. And KO and the post-game presser was already looking ahead to next year. He was asked about it, but he said, hey, look, Tahad and I are going to have a long discussion about our futures and where we want it to go. And obviously, that worked out in Auburn's favor of them returning and being a part of next season's roster. And you look back at the successful Auburn teams of the past. Let's go as recent as the Final Four team. Tahad obviously was the newcomer. He was the freshman. Denver Jones, though, he had to go through some growing pains the year prior in that SEC tournament championship season. We know how that ended. And then he comes back as a starting point guard with Tahad backing him up and Miles Kelly next to him. That was obviously a successful year. And I think that I don't want to say that Denver doesn't get enough credit for that, because I think a majority of Auburn fans understand what he did for that team. But I don't, obviously all the shine goes to Jani Broome and even Dylan Carwell to an extent, as well as Tahad Pettiford for his heroics in the postseason. But Denver Jones, look at the Michigan game, you look at even the Creighton game, those two games, Auburn doesn't win without him. Then you go back to 2022, it's a little different. You bring in Wendell Green and Zepp Jasper, and this is where I think it's interesting. Because obviously the catalyst of those of that team were the big men, and Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler. They really elevated Wendell and Zepp Jasper, as well as KD Johnson. Those three guys, you kind of saw it the following year, they weren't the same without those two big men. And that's where I think, you know, Oboye and Ngoy and Freeman and Dowd can all elevate what Pettiford and Overton are capable of. Yes, it's great when both of those guys are scoring 25 a night, but what I think we've seen ever since Bruce Pearl stepped on campus was that this system is more successful when the point guards and the shooting guards are not having to carry the load and the weight of all the scoring. When you're able to dish it out to a wing, to be determined who that is, or down low to a Thomas Dowd who can stretch the floor or bang inside. And then obviously the big man like a Narcisse Ngoy or Buki Oboye and Owen Freeman, that's when these teams are most successful. Let's go back to 2019, the first Final Four team. Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, the best example of this. Two guys that were very experienced. Brown was a senior, Jared was a junior. And both of them, when they were young and they were freshmen and sophomores, I mean, made you want to rip your hair out sometimes. Whether it was Jared turning the ball over or Bryce taking ill-advised shots, whatever it was, they developed into legends by their final years at Auburn. And the reason that run was possible was because those two guys were veterans and experienced and knew how to play with guys like Chuma Okeke, as well as Samir Dowdy, and down low with Anthony McLemore, Austin Wiley, Dangelle Purifoy. all those guys were able to play well because of what Jared and Bryce did on the perimeter, passing the ball as well as scoring. I don't want to sit here and make comparisons between Tahad and Kevin and Jared and Bryce, but I think when you look at the makeup of these guys, Jared and Tahad, ice cold killers and in clutch time, especially Kevin Overton and Bryce Brown, the sharp shooters, but they're capable of dribbling the basketball and play pretty solid defense. Bryce Brown's defense improves so much over his career. And I think KO can make a similar jump as well. So all that to say, regardless if they mimic them or even play up to necessarily that level as they did in their Final Four season, as long as they make a bit of a jump, then you feel pretty good about those guys that you brought in that produced at a high level at their previous stops to kind of fit in and find it. So that's kind of the whole deal, and why Stephen Pearl was so big on that. He thinks that Tahad found his rhythm late in the season. Of course, there were both of them, KO and Tahad, both were benched for games due to soft suspensions. You know, the ones where they were late for breakfast, so they missed the rotation. They didn't start the game, and I think both of those guys, it was a wake up moment for them to lock in and be ready for that final stretch of the season, and clearly they were with what happened in that NIT. So, that's a huge deal. And then KO, I think just from the aspect of what he said all season long about wanting to come back and play for a team for a second year because he had never done that. He's obviously capable. We know that, but he's also going to be really motivated to show why that's a big deal for him. So I'm excited to see that development continue and see what he's made of, and hopefully a team that's constructed around these two guys, because that was the first two obviously commitments was their returns. And yes, it sucks that in today's day and age, you get commitments from guys that are already on your team, but it's part of it. And when they got them, that's when Coach Pearl, General Manager Kloman, Burgo, Ian Borders, Matt Gatens, Corey Williams, and Ira Bowman all went to work and scouting these guys that they brought in from the transfer portal and making sure they fit. So that's the thing. I think that all comes around and what... Obviously, Tahad was not his freshman year self this past season. So the hope is that it was a sophomore slump and that now that a little bit of the pressure's off, obviously he went through the draft process after his freshman year and strongly considered staying in the NBA draft, but then opted to come back to Auburn and play a sophomore year. He didn't do any of that this year. I mean, he returned within a week or two after that NIT championship and announced that he was going to be back at Auburn. No NBA draft process or anything. He knew what was needed for him to come back and really take that next jump to be in the NBA. So he wants to do that alongside Kevin Overton and all these players that have been brought into the program. So that's my thing. I think and hope that obviously it was just a sophomore slump for Tahad, because when you compare his seasons, like he was a little bit better in 2025, especially on the offensive end. His defense, while it might not show specifically in the analytics that it got better, I just think that, like, for example, you just look at some of the comparisons. Like, his 2025 campaign on KenPom is compared to Shabazz Napier in 2011. That is one heck of a comparison. So he didn't have any of those in 2026. He just shot the ball better his freshman campaign. And now his turnover rate went down a hair. His defense definitely improved quite a bit. Like I said, it doesn't show it analytically, but I still think that just the eye test tells you that Tahad was more locked in and was ready to go for his defensive ability, and especially when he was guarding the point guards in the SEC that he had to guard. Like, Darius Aycuffe Jr. is going to be a top five at worst pick in the NBA draft coming up. It's not to mention Otega Owe, LeBaron Filon, who's going to be a top 10 pick in the NBA draft, and Josh Hubbard, and so many others. And of course, you know, I mentioned Josh Hubbard, and you say, well, he dropped 46 points on Auburn, however many it was. And yeah, that happens when, look, when a guy bombs threes over you, it is what it is. You can't do much to stop it. He didn't have a successful game in Nashville against Auburn. He was pretty much a nothing burger for the Bulldogs in Nashville, and in Auburn's win over the Mississippi State Bulldogs. So that's where I kind of lean towards is look, Tahad, maybe he won't get back up to that freshman year level, but I think that there is a medium between how he played last year and that freshman campaign that he can find, and that would be an improvement from last year. And that's simply because of how many minutes he had to play compared to 2025. It's a whole new world when you're the guy versus the sixth man, the spark, and everyone is excited for you to come in. When you're the guy on the field, it's all right, get it done. So can't wait to see it. I can't wait to hear more about this team as things develop. They're going to be having summer workouts starting in June, so right around the corner. And then obviously they'll get back to classes in August and start to have preseason camp and practices in September. So got a long way to go until then. Still got to find that wing, that small forward. And we still got to learn a lot about the schedule. We'll break it all down for you right here on the Barn Hoops podcast. So make sure you're subscribed right here to the Barn Podcast Network on YouTube. Hit the like button while you're there, and then go over to your podcast platform of choice. Subscribe there as well, and you'll get all the updates from the Barn Podcast Network, whether it's something about Auburn football or Auburn basketball and Auburn baseball coming up over these next several weeks. So again, we're going to try and hopefully we'll have a roster finalized soon. Coach Pearl at that ambush event mentioned, like, hey, we're not going to rush this. There's no reason to. So I said a few weeks ago, I didn't think it would get to Memorial Day. We're inching closer to Memorial Day, so we'll see if that's the case. But regardless, we'll have all that discussion right here on the Barn Hoops podcast. And again, want to compare it, talk about his comments, Coach Pearl's comments, when it relates to the culture of this program and this team, and what it means going forward into this next season, and how Auburn can take that next step back into SEC championship contention, obviously solidifying itself into the NCAA tournament and everything that goes with that. So with that being said, thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Barn Hoops podcast.